Some wonder what the first look through this prism might have looked like. The origin of life is one of the great philosophical and scientific questions, and about the only thing we're definitely sure of is that life occurred before either the chicken or the egg. Was life brought to Earth through comets? Did it arise naturally through some kind of alchemical process? To date, no one has really been able to salt away the answer. One clue may have recently been uncovered by Florida State University scientists. Helping us to look at our possible origin is Michael Blaber. He's a professor of biomedical sciences at Florida State. Welcome, Dr. Blaber.
Thank you.
At one point in history, salt was actually used as currency. I understand that your research suggests that there might be a reason for that, even if our ancestors weren't aware, that life couldn't have happened without salt. Well, salt and a mix of factors, including at least 10 amino acids that you've identified. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Salt, specifically high salt environments, as might occur in lakes that evaporate, so-called evaporative type lakes. There are specialized organisms that live in such environments. And prevailing idea is that life adapted to that environment. And I suppose one of the big changes in attitude that we're proposing is that it's not that life emerged elsewhere and adapted into high salt environments, but that is the likely location where life actually emerged.
So the salt itself wasn't crucial. It just happened to be one of the elements that was plentiful in these environments?
I don't think you could neatly separate it. You would probably say that it played an important role in a number of factors, but aspects of abiogenesis appear to be keenly attuned to play a role in the high salt environment.
I wonder if it has to do with conductivity. I understand that water actually does not conduct electricity. It's the substances within the water, the salts and other materials. Is that why salt might be important?
One of the roles that we think salt played in this process is related to the ability to screen electrical charges. And it's a bit detailed, but it turns out that one of the things we propose is that the earliest proteins had to have been quite acidic because there's been no efficient means to simply chemically synthesize the basic amino acid. And so if you try to make a protein which is essentially purely acidic, charges tend to repel one another, and the protein is unlikely to fold because of that reason. But in high salt, these charges are screened and not so problematic.
Now, your study deals with what Earth might have been like during some of its earlier days, about 4 billion years ago. Can you describe what that Earth might have been like?
It's a complicated question. We don't attempt to propose a specific environmental condition that Earth was like. There's many other better qualified people to address that. What we looked at specifically was a question about the very earliest proteins. What was their likely composition? And based upon that information, what was the most likely environment that would be supportive for protein folding? And that series of questions unambiguously identifies the high salt environment. When you look at the high salt environment, a number of other researchers in the field of abiogenesis have identified it as being useful for different reasons. And so when you put all the reasons together, it becomes very compelling. One reason is, you might appreciate, as a salt lake evaporates, the constituents, chemical constituents in the water tend to concentrate. And one of the essential properties of making complex molecules or the synthesis of complex molecules is that you bring building blocks together, and concentration helps to solve that problem. Another is that the formation of chemical bonds to make either proteins or DNA or RNA is actually unfavorable in water. It's the breaking of those bonds that's actually favorable. And so how might those bonds have been made? And it turns out that another area of investigation by other investigators has indicated that high salt can actually drive the types of chemical reactions that can join amino acids together to make polypeptides. So the high salt environment, again, typically when you look at it in textbooks and literature and so on, it's always described as a curious little environment that life was able to adapt into and survive in and take advantage of, perhaps. I think really what the data is suggesting is that it's much more likely that it's an environment in which life first emerged.
And your study seems to contradict several popular theories. For example, Many scientists believe that RNA had a very significant role to play in our earliest creations.
It's overly simplistic, but you can divide the argument into a protein-first or an RNA-first view. And one aspect of that argument is which of these biomolecules is most likely to have emerged first and to have had the ability to contribute aspects of chemistry that we would describe as associated with living systems. Now, let me back up a little bit. When we try to understand that question, we tend to look at existing molecules, and that would be RNA, DNA, or proteins. Not mixtures of these, but pure polymers of these components. And we tend to think of them as, okay, which one came first? And that's probably overly simplistic and unlikely to appreciate all the things that could have happened actually in the process of forming life. But when you look at that, you can ask, okay, what simple chemical building blocks were in the environment? In other words, when you look at all the feasible synthetic reactions that might occur naturally, not depending on living systems, but just are driven by energy sources such as lightning and hydrothermal energy and reductive energy, light, and so on and so forth, what you find is that you almost always, in a variety of sources, including deep space chemistry, you can almost always make amino acids, alpha amino acids. It is feasible that you can make some simple sugars, and it's feasible that you can make some simple bases. How do you make something as complicated as a nucleoside? That from simple chemistry, that's a real toughie. But you can make alpha amino acids, and in principle, there are processes in which you can join those together to make polypeptides, which is a tiny protein, if you will. And so from that standpoint, it's a very compelling argument that it is likely that proteins emerged or could have emerged very, very early in the process. And the question we looked at was related to the properties of the limited set of alpha amino acids that can be made by simple chemical means, and to ask if they were polymerized, gained potentially via high salt-driven processes, and they made polypeptides, what would the property of these polypeptides be? And there's a very specific thermodynamic and chemical property, many current proteins that perform the biochemistry of living systems, and that is that they can fold into a very specific structure, and that structure confers a functionality which is often an enzymatic functionality. And the requirement of foldability is something that is a subject of much investigation, and we know a lot about it. We don't know everything about protein folding, but we know a lot. And when you add up the things that we do know, and you ask whether the limited set of amino acids that could be produced by simple chemical means would be able to meet those requirements of foldability, the answer is rather surprising, yes. And put another way, if I was to ask a protein engineer to design a limited alphabet of amino acids that would form the basis of a toolkit to design useful foldable proteins, in a sense, it would be difficult to come up with a better choice than those amino acids that can actually be produced by simple chemical means.
And so it's through that type of deductive reasoning and experimentation that you've identified these 10 prebiotic amino acids, which you believe may have formed the basis of all life on Earth?
Yes. It began as an exercise just in compiling available data. There's a variety of chemical means, but there's some commonly accepted ones. And this would be spark discharge or atmospheric discharge chemistry. And this is lightning as a source of energy, and then simple gases in the atmosphere, methane, carbon dioxide, nitrogen, were shown in the 50s in famous experiments by Stanley Miller. Over time, these continuous spark discharge in this mixture of simple gases could produce, you know, a tarry-like mixture of organic compounds within which were a certain set of alpha amino acids. So modern proteins are composed typically of 20 different common amino acids, and simple spark discharge experiments can produce something like 7 or 8 of these. Similarly, there's chemistry that goes on in hydrothermal vents. These would be these deep ocean volcanic-type hot vents that spew out a variety of chemical compounds and interact with the minerals around it. And these can produce, again, a set of 7 or 8 or 9 amino acids. Then those processes were going on in the early Earth prior to the emergence of life, and they were producing, distributing, and accumulating a variety of organic compounds. including, again, a set of about, you know, half a dozen or more alpha amino acids. At the same time, there was a period in which there was tremendous bombardment of the Earth with leftover material from the formation of the solar system. This would be comets and meteorites and so on, and they were delivering a substantial amount of material which originated in deep space and was subject to chemistry that is sort of poorly understood, but it's surface chemistry on silicates and graphites and so on, powered by high-energy particles. And a tremendous amount of chemistry goes on in deep space, producing organic compounds. And these were delivered to the Earth's surface, again, distributed throughout the oceans and so on. And they accumulated. Now, they can produce, again, about, you know, 7 or 8 alpha amino acids, in addition to a variety of other compounds. But when you add all these up, there's a remarkably consistent set of alpha amino acids that can be produced by simple chemical means or delivery from outside the Earth. And when you add these up, it's about 10 amino acids. And if you ask the question, how good are these amino acids at forming and stabilizing basic aspects of protein structure, such as alpha helices, beta strands, and reverse turns? These are the fundamental types of protein secondary structure. The amino acids in that set are the best at doing that. I mean, it's truly remarkable. It's really to the point of being mind-blowing that the set of amino acids that can be produced by simple chemical means, in a sense, are almost ideal for designing foldable proteins. There are some very interesting limitations which identify the high-salt environment as being one of particular interest. A specific limitation is that basic amino acids are rarely, if ever, produced. And so the polypeptides that could have been made would be limited to being essentially entirely acidic. Now, this is very strange because every organism and its collection of proteins in living systems has proteins that contain both acidic and basic groups in them. But there's one known proteome which is essentially exclusively acidic, and that is the halophile archaebacteria. And what happens is the acidic groups in the proteins allows them to be soluble in high salt, and certain other features allows them to be stable in high salt. And that suggested that, well, if you take the so-called set of 10 prebiotic amino acids and you design a protein and ask, is it able to fold up into a defined structure? It turns out that in high salt, it looks like it can. And so what that tends to do is to say, well, let's not think about the high salt environment as a curious niche that life adapted into. Let's think about it as the cradle of abiogenesis.
Want to zoom about 4 billion years into the future from the point you're talking about and just ask, these 10 prebiotic amino acids that you've identified, to what degree are they evolved? To what degree do we still rely on them as they might have been way back then?
Very interesting. So one of the hypotheses to consider is that if a general property of the 10 prebiotic amino acids is that they contribute much, or they contribute the fundamental basis of a foldable polypeptide, then the other 10 amino acids that cannot be made by simple chemical means and appear to have emerged through the development of biosynthetic pathways using either catalytic RNA or proteins as enzymes, what do those so-called biotic 10 amino acids do? And you could hypothesize that perhaps what they did is they enhanced the functionality of the protein, not necessarily the ability to form folded structure, but to adapt the folded structure to novel functionalities. And in that case, one possibility is that in current proteins, regions that are participating principally in stabilizing or forming the basic architecture of the protein are rich in prebiotic amino acids. And those regions that are conferring much of the functionality are members of the 10 so-called biotic amino acids. Now, that's a hypothesis that we're looking at as yet to be supported, but that's one idea.
Taking a look at the very first steps in the evolution of life on planet Earth, I'm Andrew Hiller for The Prism, and we've been joined by Michael Blaber. He's a professor of biomedical sciences at Florida State University. Thank you for taking us back.
Yes, you're welcome. My pleasure.